This week on the Best of Flashpoints, wall-to-wall coverage of Israel's vicious civilian bombing campaign of the Gaza Strip. At last count on Thursday, 428 have been killed and thousands wounded, hundreds more are still missing. We'll hear from human rights activists, reporters, and bloggers on the ground in Gaza. From Lebanon, a crew member of the relief ship that was rammed by the Israeli Navy. From Hawaii, where a retired U.S. Army colonel protested outside the Obama compound. And from the streets of San Francisco, Dennis Bernstein and Nora Barrows-Friedman are coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We now continue our drumbeat coverage of the ongoing massacres inside the occupied Gaza Strip by Israeli air forces as they continue to attack Palestinians across Gaza for the fourth day. We're hearing as many as 390 Palestinians have been killed since Saturday morning. We're now joined on the line by Samah Habib. He is a blogger, freelance journalist, and child humanitarian worker living inside Gaza City. Samah, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Welcome, Nora. Hello again.
Well, thank you for being with us. Last night when we talked...
Can you hear?
Yeah.
It's day 16. No, yeah, again, it's the same like yesterday. Many bombings are still taking place.
And yeah. What's happening in the background? It sounds like someone's yelling. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, it's in the TV, just in the radio stations are tuning. Because before a few minutes, there was heavy bombings west of Gaza City. And it's still the situation very direful. Still more bombings just taking place. And after you finished the interview with me yesterday night, there was a very heavy bombings west of Gaza City that targeted the governmental offices of the Iran government here, Hamas government. The heavy bombings just lasted for around 30 minutes, in which around 15 bombings, now more bombings. Yes, I was telling you that around 30 minutes yesterday, there was a continued bombings, and it was very, very heavy Israeli missiles against the governmental offices here in the Gaza Strip. And these governmental offices were just surrounded by many buildings, densely populated. There was a very panic and a very... stressing situation on the civilians. It was a very hot night, and today started also with another circle of violence. Two children were killed in the north of Gaza while they were under just more bombings now. I was telling you, just two children, female also children were killing as an Israeli airplane raided on them. They were just 4 years and 11 years, and they were killed. And also, there were many casualties, around maybe 10 to 15 killed today. And still we have a very bad situation in the hospitals. Still we have a very humanitarian situation in which most of life aspects are not available in the Gaza Strip. Hospitals are not able to deal with the amount of the casualties. Now we are speaking about around 390 Palestinians killed and around 1,700 to 800 people who are injured, and around 200 out of them are in a critical situation and they are in bad need for treatment. And ironically, the hospitals of the Gaza Strip are not able to deal with this big amount of casualties. We do not have enough medical equipment, medical tools. We do not have spare parts for what we have from the old machines. And also, we do not have enough medicines for those who are sick and for those patients. So it's still a dire situation, and we are afraid the situation will be exasperating in a couple of hours. We've heard some voices that were saying that will be maybe something, a ceasefire or something, but on the ground we have nothing. We have the Israeli bombings and the heaviest bombings ever we heard in the Gaza Strip. We have heard, we never heard of such bombings in Gaza Strip.
That's the voice of Sama Habib. He's a freelance journalist speaking to us from under siege inside Gaza City. Sama, can you describe the mood on the ground right now as night falls, as people are trying to barricade themselves inside their homes, and as the bombings intensify? What are people saying right now?
Well, people are just requesting any kind of intervention, any kind of interference to end the calamities, the catastrophes we have here. Many people are just calling for a ceasefire, for lifting the siege in the Gaza Strip. A feeling of frustration is surrounding the people of Gaza because they do not have the basis of basic life. Now, we were speaking about houses with no bread. We were speaking about houses with no cooking gas and with no power. So if you are living in a house with nothing, just so how will your life be? It's so bad when you don't have these basics. This is what we have in every Palestinian house, and I personally have this. We don't have to have enough power, we do not have enough gas, and we are facing very problematic situation in terms of food. If we want to cook something, if we want to buy something, and if we want to bread, so we have to go to the bakery and wait for hours and hours to get some bread and eat, and somehow we don't Sometimes we do not find this bread.
Sama, as Israel continues to drop tons of bombs on the people of Gaza at this moment, Israeli Knesset member Meir Shitrit, the interior minister, said, quote, there is no room for a ceasefire. What's your reaction to the Israeli cabinet saying that they have no interest in having a ceasefire right now?
This is reflects what is happening in the Israeli mainstreaming Gaza Strip. This reflects the spirit of Israelis towards the problem with the Palestinians. This reflects that there is no Israeli interest for peace. We have a President Abbas. He's giving his hand for peace. So if you don't want to deal with Hamas, so you have a President Abbas. Well, you didn't make peace with him. Since Annapolis, you're giving him only cold shoulders. You didn't make peace. So it's a lie, and Israelis are just keeping on their way away from peace. They're just determined on keeping on in the violence and killing the Palestinians. And this was so clear in the last 2 days when you were just bombing tons of explosions in a very densely populated, which is the biggest densely populated area in the Gaza Strip. This is so obvious, and it's a flagrant violation against all the humanitarian laws, and especially the Fourth Geneva Convention, which prevents the collective punishment policy. If Israel has a problem, as I told you before, and as I'm telling all the people, if Israel has a problem with those who are firing rockets, so Israel has to solve this with them, not with the civilians. And now the media is saying it's a matter of rocket, but I'm telling, it's not a matter of rocket, it's a matter of harming civilians. That's it. I'm now neighboring.
Sama, describe for us what's going on right now outside your window.
Now we have the reconnaissance planes filling the sky, and we have some F-16, and also today we have many tanks participated in shelling part of the Gaza Strip. I'm just looking from a window of my friend because I'm out of the house now, and maybe you're hearing the sound of the Israeli rockets.
Are those being fired from F-16s?
Yes, it's F-16. Yes, F-16. It's hitting some part of Gaza City, specifically in the west of Gaza. And just before around 30 minutes, there was a heavy bombing in the same place. And now I expect that this will escalate in the night because more escalated steps are just taking place mid of night. Now many F-16 and helicopters in the sky, and maybe something would be happening soon.
The silence between the bombings is deafening. Can you talk a little bit about what people with small children are going through right now?
It's traumatized. I mean, children are completely traumatized now. It was midnight, and I myself was so scared when I heard around 15 consequent bombings in the same time, consequently. And imagine this, I was scared, and I'm 23. Imagine what was really happening for a four-year-old. And then I met some children today in the streets, and I've seen their faces. they were just very, very just depressed and frustrated, and you could see the fear inside their eyes, and they have nothing to do at their hands. They can do nothing to prevent this. I don't know what to say about these children. And if you go to my BKS and if you just see how they look and how their eyes could tell what is happening, could tell their suffering. I could not just describe what they have.
Okay, Samah Habib, we're going to check back with you very shortly as this unfolds into another nightmare for the fourth day inside occupied Gaza. Samah, you have a blog. It's called gazatoday.blogspot.com. People can go there and read your latest reports and look at pictures that you're not seeing in the mainstream corporate media here in the United States. Samah, please be safe, and we will check back with you very shortly.
Thank you.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein with Nora Barros-Friedman. We continue our drumbeat reporting on the attacks that have continued heavily on Gaza. We're joined now again by Fida Kishta. She's a Palestinian journalist, activist, working with the International Solidarity Movement and living in Rafah. Fida, welcome back to Flashpoints. Last we spoke to you was about 24 hours ago. It's been a very heavy bombing. Could you give us the information that you have in terms of the casualties and what's been going on the ground?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk from the south of the Gaza Strip to the north of the Gaza Strip. Where I live, in the south of Gaza, Rafah city, the last attack happened yesterday. Today it's another attack, but let's talk about the injuries and the martyrs who killed yesterday. The attack happened 11:40 before the new year started in 20 minutes. It was attacked to a park in Rafah, more than 40 houses damaged, and two people killed, a young guy, 22 years old, a woman, 33 years old. Another 59 got injured, 18 from them women, 16 children, and situation is still the same, the attacks from the airstrikes, and we still expect the incursion from the ground any minute. In Gaza City, the biggest attack was in Jabalia today afternoon when they attacked one of the leader's houses. He refused to leave his house, and he said that he would like to stay in his house. If they want to kill him, then they just go ahead to kill him. But the shock for all the Gazans that they attacked his house, but airstrike, and he and another 10 members in his family killed, including his wife and his children. That was the biggest attack for today in Gaza Strip. So the martyrs increased to 414, and the injured increased for 2,250, and the numbers still increase every single minute. Now, the things that the people are talking about, that they started to attack civilians' buildings like Rafah when they attacked the park for children yesterday. It was among the crowded area in Rafah. It is a Shabura camp. It's the most crowded camp. So when they attacked it, it's a massive to think about how many could kill if they just throw another rocket.
They attacked the park in a most densely populated part of Rafah in the refugee camp. What was going on at the time? Where were the people when they were hit? Who exactly was in the middle of the attack?
All of them civilians, all of them. One of the interviews that I did was a child, and I asked her, do you think why they attacked the park? And she said, you know, they don't want to even, they don't want us even to have fun. And she said that they were sleeping, and the attack happened. And from the smoke, they didn't see anything. I saw part of their house is totally damaged. Their house is three floors, and it is part of it. It's really, I can't imagine. Bachel was talking about the civilians, how they attack civilians, and she kept saying, where is the people who they're talking about? She's a child in her 12th. She kept talking about the children and how they attacked them. She said that they were sleeping. They attacked the park, and many got injured, and they just tried to leave the neighborhood to be somewhere else because they expect something more to happen. In the morning, they returned back to the neighborhood and tried to see what exactly happened. It was really big. What an exoplanet. It's a big genocide, like, to see all the children like that. We went to the hospital. Most of the children who got injured, between 5, 4, like that. And even the women, they are old people.
You went to the hospital where the people were taken after the attack. You were talking with children, I guess, the victims of the attack. And this was a child's play park you're talking about, where kids play.
Yes.
And the attack happened 20 minutes before the new year. And people were sleeping.
Yeah. One of the neighbors was kidding about the war. They said, this is the Happy New Year from the Israelis. They sent the rocket to say Happy New Year in their way.
And describe a little bit more of what the scene was like in the hospital, if you could, and what was happening, please.
Okay, the front hospital in Rafah, it's Abu Major Hospital. It's not that big hospital, it's like a clinic, but somehow it helps the people in Rafah to get some treatment. Most rooms that we visited and took to the children, all the women there, it wasn't serious injury, but when we asked the people there, the manager of the hospital and some of the doctors there, they said that all the cases that come to the hospital, usually they transfer them to another hospital, could deal with their cases better because it's not that big hospital. They don't have any supplies to work and to make surgeries or anything like that. They just make the first aid and help them and then send them somewhere else. But the general scene in the hospital was, I'm not going to say good, but it was really sad to see these children in the hospital and try even talk to them. For us, we just tried to be with them and talk a little bit with them. And at the end, we just give them some chocolate to make them feel better and leave.
And are people going to try and go back to the place where you mentioned that they went back and you visited the place to evaluate the damage and talk to the people? Where will these children and these families go, the ones who survived, who weren't wounded and are in hospital? What will happen?
Well, one of the children that I asked, would you like to go back to your neighborhood? How are you going to spend your time? Where are you going to go? And the child said, we're going to go back to our house. We're going to stay in our house. This one of the children also said, we met her in the neighborhood. She said, we're going to stay in our neighborhood. We're going to stay in our house. Do you think where we can go? It's a question. Where they can go? It's a problem that the people don't have places to go. Just to give a abbreviation that in Rafah, more than 3,000 houses are demolished by the Israelis army when they built the wall in between 2000 to 2004. So it's going to be a massive problem that we're going to face if more houses are going to destroy. So I don't know exactly where these people are going to go. It's in the winter, very cold. Some people try to fix their windows, as we saw. They use just pieces of plastic to close the windows. Did you hear this attack?
What is going on there?
It's airstrike. It's for sure for one of the houses, the civilians' houses. My son was scared, went to see where it's happening. Do you hear?
We hear it, yes. Tell us more. Can you...
I'm just trying to
You're checking out the window now to see what's going on. Be careful, please.
I actually opened the door, but you hear?
Yes.
It's civilian building.
These are civilian attacks on civilian areas that we're listening to now. Fida, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay, and these are, as we're talking, there are more air attacks. Are these attacks coming from drones or F-16s or from the sea? Are you being shelled from the sea? What exactly can you say about these attacks right now as we speak?
Well, most of the time it's attacked by the F-16s. The drone, it's far to attack the people. It's just to watch the area and give the orders to these F-16s. That's how the F-16s work. So I'm sure in the news later we're going to hear that many got injured, most of them going to be children. My family keep watching the television most of the time, and nobody leaves except me and other friends who are trying to cover the news. And if you would like to hear more, I have an international friend. She's here with my family. She can just explain also more about this situation. It could help if you feel that an international like you explain what she feels. I will try to let her talk to you. Ginny.
What's her name now?
Ginny Linnell. She's English.
Okay, why don't you put her on the phone?
Okay.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That was Fida Kishta. She's a Palestinian journalist living in Rafah with her family. And now we're going to be speaking with an internationalist. Jenny, are you there?
Hello.
Hi. Could you introduce yourself, please, and tell us what you're seeing and hearing, what you've been doing over the last 12 hours to document the latest attacks?
My name is Jenny Linnell. I'm currently working with the International Solidarity Movement here in the Gaza Strip.
Help us understand more in terms of precisely who the people are. I was talking to Fida, you all. I guess she went to the hospital. I guess you went with her. But introduce us to some of the faces and the people that stand out for you and just some of the things they said to you or didn't say.
I have to say that a couple of the patients I met in hospital today who obviously really touched me were two children, two little boys who'd both been hit in the attack on Chibor last night, both about the age of five, just lying in bed, looking broken almost, just looking so sad. As if no one cared about them, basically. The expression on their face just sums up that they can be attacked in this manner and nobody does anything about it, nobody does anything for them to help them. And that's what I saw in those little boys' faces today in the hospital. They both had head injuries.
And just a little bit more about the damage we were talking about, hitting the park and hitting the children and hitting the houses around the park. The Israeli military swears they're hitting military targets, and we're hearing this figure.
Absolutely not.
We're hearing this figure that 80% of those who were wounded and killed were Hamas leaders or terrorists. How does that sit with your first-hand eyewitness visions on the ground?
It's absolutely not true. There are huge numbers of civilian casualties. It's a lie. It's a total lie to say that it's Hamas targets that are being struck. It's civilian areas being struck. Homes. Today, a park, it was many homes that were severely damaged or destroyed by that. It's a university. It's several mosques. It's clinics. There has been a clinic hit in Gaza City and medical supply storage units. Fire stations have been hit.
the people who actually go to battle the blazes that result from a missile strike have been attacked also. Are they Hamas targets? The homes of families where there may be several children? A three-year-old child, is he a Hamas target?
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Jenny. She's an international worker from Great Britain. We're speaking to her in the house of Fida Kishta. Fida Kishta is a Palestinian, young Palestinian, 26-year-old journalist who has been trying to cover the story. She lives in Rafah with her family. You are all there together as the bombings continued. We just heard a few more bombings taking place as we were speaking with you. And Fida, can you, one of the things we're also following up on is what's happening to ambulance workers, medical workers, when they attempt to deal with the wounded and the dead. Do you have any information about...
I do. Yes, today when we were at the Abu Yusuf Al-Najjar Hospital in Rafah, which has been described as a frontline hospital, it's only a small hospital, but it's where patients from Rafah, casualties from these attacks, arrive immediately, and more serious cases then get transferred on to the larger European hospital near Khan Yunis. And the manager of the Al-Najjar Hospital, Dr. Abdullah Shahada, was telling us about in these last days, 11 ambulances in the Gaza Strip have been attacked during these strikes, and three paramedics have actually been killed.
Three paramedics were killed, and I guess they were not Hamas leaders as well.
I don't think that they were. I think that they were the very people who are going to the aid of the civilians who are being... who are the casualties of these strikes.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for speaking with us. Is there any other specifics that you want to share with our audience in the United States where this story is essentially being cleansed? According to National Public Radio, I'm telling you the truth. The report was the Hamas leader was killed. That's all we heard in terms of the... bombing, and we also heard about there were three Israelis have been killed in the last week or so, and it could have been a lot worse, the reporters from NPR were saying, because a rocket from Gaza had hit a school, and if there were children in there, there would have been a lot more people wounded. Do you want to respond to that?
It's not one Hamas leader killed in the Gaza Strip. It's 420 people, the vast majority of them civilians, and over 2,100, probably closer to 2,200 by now, injured, many of them seriously, and again, most of them civilians, many, many, many of them children. The numbers keep rising, the death toll keeps rising, as do the numbers of casualties. That's what people need to know is happening on the ground here right now. That is the reality of the situation.
All right. Well, I hope that you will be careful, that you will give our thanks to Fida Kishta for being willing to talk with us, and both of you for having the courage to go out into the streets, to the hospitals, on the ground, and bring us information that is being totally censored because the Gaza Strip is surrounded. And because it is very difficult for journalists to work inside the Gaza Strip. So we count on the courage of you on the ground, independent activists, Palestinians risking their life, and international solidarity workers being with them. Thanks for being with us. We hope that we can check back with you tomorrow.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Every time I read the news, I'm always more confused. They're telling me to choose, but there's only lies to choose from. And how many died today? How many lost their homes or shot a gun? Or a loved one?
in Berkeley. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We continue our coverage of the Israeli siege and bombing of the Gaza Strip. Just before airtime, we reached Cuiva Butterly, a lead organizer of the Free Gaza Movement, who was on a boat full of humanitarian supplies heading for the Gaza Strip yesterday when it was rammed at sea by Israeli naval forces and turned back to Lebanon.
Our intention was the same intention as we had when we launched the other five trips to break the siege that, that Free Gaza has been organizing over the past few months, and that was to bring humanitarian and medical relief to the people of Gaza, and also to bring witnesses into Gaza to document and report on what's going on, and also to volunteer. In this particular case, it was an emergency response to the intensification of the situation in Gaza, you know, with the almost 400 Palestinians who have been killed in the past days, you know, the humanitarian crisis that is deepening, the Israelis' blocking of witnesses, of journalists, of humanitarian aid workers and activists from entry into Gaza. And also to state, you know, in a time, you know, where we once again see our governments, you know, thoroughly complicit in the prolongation of the siege and occupation, to really represent an alternative face of the outside world, one of solidarity and compassion and outrage, you know, at the daily violations that the people of Gaza are suffering at the hands of the Israeli forces. So our intention was to bring medical aid, and we had a request from the Ministry of Health also to bring in specialist doctors. We were bringing in trauma surgeons to come to Gaza with us, but we were obviously blocked today from doing so, which doesn't mean that we're not going to try to go back again in the next 2 or 3 days. But unfortunately, because we were rammed 3 times in quick succession by the Israeli Navy, our boat is out of commission until we get it fixed, so we have to look for another one.
Could you describe exactly how that happened? Did they know who you were? Did they understand this was a peace mission?
We had done press work in the days prior to leaving Cyprus, declaring our mission, declaring that it was a humanitarian one, that we were bringing in doctors and surgeons and activists and journalists and medical aid. The Cypriots, you know, obviously pass on, you know, I'm quite sure the list of our names to the Israelis. It was well publicized and it was well known that we were a civilian mission. So any, you know, sort of arguments to the contrary, I think, are just quite ridiculous. But before we were rammed, we were not communicated with. We had no radio communication with the Israeli Navy. So we were traveling to Gaza with, you know, some fear of the possibility of either being arrested or being blocked by force. But we did not expect that to happen in international waters. We thought as we got closer to Gaza, in waters that are illegally patrolled by the Israeli Navy, that we would be probably stopped there, or that they'd attempt to stop us there. So we were quite shocked that it happened in international waters. And because it was so early in the morning and we weren't expecting any problems for hours after that, we were unprepared for it as well. But so we left Cyprus at 8 p.m. yesterday evening. And then at 5, a little bit before 5 today, the Israeli Navy started to follow our boats. They had between 4 or 5 Navy vessels that were tailing us, and they were using sort of spotlights or sort of flash floodlights in sort of succession. So, you know, one would shine a very bright light into our boat, and then it would suddenly go off, and then we wouldn't be able to see where that boat was, and another would shine, you know, a light into the boat. And that was happening, and they were shooting flares above our boat for about half an hour as we progressed, and they followed us sort of, you know, sailing around us in a loop. And then at 5:15, with no warning whatsoever, they, in quick succession, rammed our boat 3 times, you know, shattering all the windows, damaging the roof. You know, the boat began to take on water, etc. And at that point, after they had rammed our boat, they communicated with us with radio, and they said we had to go back to Larnaca now. They were yelling at us and saying if we didn't, that they would use other forms of force or violence against us. So at that stage, you know, obviously we identified ourselves, you know, as a humanitarian mission, a civilian mission, etc., which they knew. I mean, I'm under no doubt whatsoever that they knew well you know, who we were and what we were doing. And then they basically accused us of engaging in terrorist activities, ordered us to go back. And at that point, they then followed us for another few hours, sort of looping around us and communicating with us by radio before they eventually left, just as we went into Lebanese waters and we were met by UNIFIL and the Lebanese Navy. But we would like to say, you know, I think collectively as a group that although this, you know, obviously was another example of, you know, the Israeli Navy, security forces, government, etc., complete disregard for international law, you know, that we, our focus remains Gaza. And, you know, this we don't want what is going on in Gaza or the context to be in Gaza to be sort of sidelined even for a day by, you know, what has become almost sensationalist coverage in the mainstream media of what happened today, because the Israelis are saying something that is so radically different to what we witnessed. But you know, we obviously, all of us remain focused on going back into Gaza, hopefully within the next few days, and, you know, continuing these missions of bringing in medical relief and witnesses and volunteers.
We're speaking with Cuiva Butterly. She's an organizer for the Free Gaza Movement. Their boat was rammed on the way into Gaza, trying again to break the siege. By the way, was anybody hurt?
No, nobody was hurt. Quite luckily, actually, because they rammed into the captain's sort of cabin at the front of the boat.
You could have been sunk there.
We could have been sunk, and that was one of the considerations behind, you know, not trying to push it any further. If they rammed us even one more time, there was a very high probability that we probably would sink.
How would you evaluate the situation now?
I think it's very desperate. It's dire. You know, and the lack of response from the international community has been extremely alarming, just in the sense of this political polarization and criminalization of, you know, in the democratically elected governments. The Ramallah PA's positions, you know, particularly Mahmoud Abbas's, have been really, you know, just I say verging on traitorous, in the sense, you know, that it so cheapens the blood of people in Gaza when they make, you know, these sort of negotiations with preconditions, you know, which they have been victims of themselves for so many years in, you know, negotiations of complete power imbalance with the Israelis. There has been a lot of popular movements across the Arab world in response to what is going on in Gaza, which is very positive, but the siege of Gaza would not exist without Egyptian complicity, and that Egyptian complicity, you know, comes from both Israeli pressure and also pressure from Ramallah, unfortunately. And I know there are many people within Fatah who thoroughly disagree with those positions, but I think it's time for them to speak out a lot more and really try and influence the direction of Fatah if they are to retain any credibility, I think, within the Palestinian national struggle.
It almost feels like sort of a silent coup against the democratically elected government of Hamas, because here you have Egypt, they have meetings with Israel leadership, and then they make a demand that sort of continues to support the move against Hamas and in support of Fatah, which has been supported now by Israel and the United States.
Yeah, a silent coup, and yet a coup whose ultimately, I think, victims will be, again, civilians. You know, the leadership of Hamas will remain relatively safe with this. You know, our evidence that this is, you know, it has political motivations perhaps against Hamas, but I think there's also a deep element of collective punishment and elements of genocide, you know, the deliberate starving, the deliberate targeting, and the deliberate slow but quite steady extermination of a civilian population is also horrific, but deserves, you know, a response from us. And that's the frightening thing about it, the normalization, the desensitization, you know, the fact that it's become something quite normal to see large numbers of Palestinians killed. But there has been some positive signs, I think, over the last few days, you know, immediate response both in the West and throughout the Arab world to what is going on. And hopefully that will continue and intensify and actually have a translation.
Another boat going to be leaving soon?
Yes, hopefully. We're looking at within the next 3 days, possibly, if we can rent the boat that we're thinking of renting. Certainly the group who was on board this time are very eager and dedicated to getting on whatever boat comes next. It's sometimes just all seems like a drop in the ocean in terms of the need.
Again, Cuiva Butterly, we hope that you will be careful talking to us now from Lebanon, where the boat you were on with other activists from the Free Gaza Movement trying to break the siege in Gaza were on when it was rammed by the Israeli security forces. We hope that Cynthia McKinney and the rest who were shaken up are feeling better, and we are all on the same boat when it comes to either there's going to be peace in this part of the world or we're all going to be at war for a long time. Thanks for being with us on
Flashpoint. Thank you very much.
in Berkeley. I'm Dennis Bernstein with Nora Barrows Friedman. We continue our coverage of the situation in Gaza, but we actually go to Hawaii, where the president-elect Obama is vacationing, and we're joined by Colonel Ann Wright, who paid a visit to the compound where the president-elect is vacationing. You went there, Colonel, to protest the Gaza bombing. Could you talk about that?
Yes, Dennis, I was here at my home in Honolulu, and I and some of the activists here in Hawaii decided that we needed to make a trip to the president-elect's compound to let him know of our concerns of Gaza and that we want him to put this high on his list of issues to be working on to push the Israelis to use diplomacy, work for a ceasefire, and stop the killing that's going on in Gaza.
His silence is rather extraordinary. It would be hard to imagine that he would have stayed silent if Palestinians killed 400 Israelis. It would be hard to imagine a silence there. What's your response to this kind of silence?
Well, he and his staff are saying, well, there's only one president at a time, and leave it to the Bush administration. Well, I would say to President-elect Obama, he's getting handed a plateful, and this is one more thing onto the plate, kind of in the tradition of the Bush family. I mean, if you think back in 1992, George Bush the First sent 30,000 U.S. military into Somalia after he had been defeated in the election. And now here we have this President Bush that's given the green light to the Israelis to go in and mop up Hamas and others in Gaza, leaving the region in a very unstable and dangerous position, and the killings of innocent civilians. And I mean, of all things, I mean, when are we going to learn that this killing is just not the way to resolve issues?
Are you surprised? I mean, you spent the last so many years getting arrested many times, former military person, getting arrested many times to protest illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Are you surprised that you now find yourself without almost a break, starting with the new president?
Well, we knew that we would have to move back onto the streets pretty quickly, because Barack Obama never said that he was a peace candidate, that he was an anti-war candidate. All he said is that he was against the Iraq war from the beginning. However, his stance on how soon the war in Iraq should end, 16 months to 24 months or longer, his very aggressive statements on Afghanistan, the numbers of the increases in the numbers of U.S. military he wants, 90,000 more in our military. We've got a lot of work to do on the issue of national security and whether it's going to be handled by military action or whether diplomacy is what's going to be used under his administration.
Well, finally, you know a lot about diplomacy. What are your concerns? What are your fears if, say, the Israelis now proceed, they continue the bombing, and then they do a land invasion? What are your concerns?
Well, it's the senseless killing of innocent civilians. It's the, again, the sovereignty, not that we've got a firm two-state solution yet, and the issue between Israel and Palestine, but this is just not the way issues are resolved, and I appeal to the new Obama administration to put this highest on their list, that they have really got to focus on this. And sometimes it doesn't have to be the U.S. directly, but we certainly hold the financial purse strings to $4 billion that we give to the Israelis, to monies that have gone in previously to the Palestinian Authority. When you have an administration like the Bush administration that doesn't even recognize an election held by the people of Gaza that elected Hamas, I mean, there's got to be some acknowledgement of what's a nonviolent way to stop this and to get a long-lasting solution to the issues of Israel and Palestine.
Well, Colonel Ann Wright, again, as always, on the front lines, fighting for peace now in Hawaii. Made your presence known at the compound where the president-elect is staying. And we're grateful for you spending the time doing this and talking to us about it.
Dennis, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
I can't help it. I don't care how far you think the analogy extends itself. When I see you making that bus driver climb up and down, on and off the roof of his bus for your amusement for hours in the hot sun, I think of how we once had to dance and sing for them while they shot our parents. When I see you keep that woman and her husband at the checkpoint while she's in labor and you stand there, listening to her scream, watching as she gives birth on the backseat of a taxi, I think of the walls around our own ghetto and how we had to crawl through the sewers looking for rats to eat while we could hear their children playing on the other side. When I see you crush that house and kill that woman and her baby with your armored bulldozer because they didn't have a permit, I think of the way we were once forced to leave our homes at the point of a gun. And when I hear your general say that in order to deal with the Intifada, you must learn from the tactics of another general, one Mr. Stroop in Warsaw, I think of how they bombed our buildings, shot us as we fell from the roofs. And I remember how we wished we could kill their babies too. And I feel sick, sick of your displaced anger, sick of your self-deception, sick of your attempts to deceive the rest of the world, sick of your accusations of anti-Semitism, sick of your occupation, sick of your apartheid state, sick of Zionism. Because standing here in Auschwitz, Birkenau, and Warsaw, I see Jenine, Yaffa, and Rafah. And I think of our ancestors, the Jewish Palestinians, who spoke so eloquently in their Arabic language. But the dead cannot speak. And now I find myself again behind the wall of a ghetto, standing with millions of other Palestinians. And I find myself shouting, Thawra, Thawra, Hatta al-Nasr, tomorrow in Jerusalem, al-Auda, return.
We're still here at Powell and Market emergency demonstration based on the bombing of Israel of the Gaza Strip. Can I ask you to tell me your name? And you were talking, just addressing the crowd here, you're talking about talking to relatives in Gaza. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what it's like trying to talk to people in Gaza and what you're hearing.
I don't even know where to start. It's extremely frustrating. You get extremely angry, and then a feeling of sadness just overwhelms you. I tried to call my auntie this morning, but as usual, the electricity is down. And I don't know what to do because I look online for casualty statistics to see what names are on there. Is it my family? Is it someone my family knows? Is it someone I know? And you just don't know these things. When you're in a situation where already there's a siege, already hundreds of people have passed away. The UN, Amnesty International, everyone's out there saying this is the most disastrous situation, that humanitarian disastrous situation we've seen yet. And yet no one's doing anything. And the US came out, made its statement and said, you know, the whole security paranoia issue that it's Israel's right to execute people, in Ehud Barak's terms, execute. And then they said we are concerned about the humanitarian situation. They say concerned, and then I wonder what that means. What are they going to do with their concerns? Nothing? That's exactly what happened. The US did not condemn the attacks and have not condemned the attacks and still have failed to address the situation, the humanitarian. Even on CNN, Fox News, not Fox, CNN, MSNBC, they go on and they interview Ehud Barak. Even some news outlets that we say are conservative, they go on and they ask Ehud Barak, you know, it seems like a lot of civilians are dying, like we've seen in Vietnam where you see the pictures. All over the world except in the US, you see the children dying. And they're interviewing people all over the world, and Ehud Barak, the defense minister, and they said, we see people dying. We see children dying. These are innocent civilians. What are you talking about? You're killing terrorist centers. And so I listen to all this in the news, and then it hits my heart because it hits home. And we've had a home in Gaza for many, many, many years. And the fact that I can't hear their voices at this moment, I don't even know where to start. It kills me in a way that is...
So you can't make contact.
Because they cut the electricity off, and sometimes they'll keep it on for a couple hours, and then immediately it's cut off. So it's... I mean, I don't even know where to... Internet, obviously you can't use the internet. I mean, no water, gas, and electricity.
We're hearing over 300 people are killed. Do you think it's more than that? Are you worried?
I think it's more than 300, only because a lot of them, if you heard this morning, they bombed the tunnels that the Palestinians have been trying to use to go through Egypt to get medical supplies, because there's not enough medical supplies with the siege. Hundreds of people were already stuck in there. There's hundreds of people that are still on the ground that they can't find. missing. People know that their families are out there, but they're missing. And there's some that they can't even identify because the bodies are so dismembered. So it's definitely more than 300 if you count those. And as I was saying earlier, they say 700 plus wounded. Of those 700, there are about 120 that are in critical condition. If you think about the siege on Gaza, you think about no water, gas, electricity, all entry and exit points are controlled by Israel and Egypt. Nothing's going in, so what is going to happen to the 120 in critical condition? Unfortunately, they will probably pass away. And of the rest that are extremely wounded, I mean, God knows what's going to happen to them.
I want to thank you for talking to us. And that was Nadine Al-Sharafa. She was at that emergency protest yesterday at Powell and Market in downtown San Francisco. Hundreds there outraged. I was there with Nora Barros Friedman, and we continue our coverage on Flashpoints. We're delighted again to be joined by Ali Abunima of the Electronic Intifada.net. Ali, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thank you, Dennis.
Well, first of all, our latest figures are 350 dead, maybe over 1,400 wounded. Do you have any further information, details, your own connections?
Well, that's exactly the information that I'm getting. Of course, as the young woman who was just speaking said, there's still a lot of confusion. Some of the mainstream media have been reporting that about 50 of the dead are civilians. I think that's completely wrong. The vast majority of the dead and injured are civilians, because many of the people killed were civil police officers. They weren't Hamas militants or Hamas fighters or terrorists, as Israel calls them. They were cops on the beat, traffic cops, many of them young cadets just wanting to make a living. Israel bombed a training college for traffic cops. When it bombed the central police station in the Gaza Strip, one of the reports we carried on Electronic Intifada, it just bombed the local police stations. When it bombed the central police station, this is just one example, it killed a father, his son, and a nephew who were just there on routine business. And then, of course, today, early this morning, you had the five young girls from the Baluchia family that were killed. There's an example, other examples of a mother and two children being killed near Rafah, and so on. It goes on and on and on. And of course, many dead were buried without being reported. And many of the injured who were not gravely injured, but nevertheless seriously injured, just went home without reporting their injuries because the hospitals are so overwhelmed anyway that there's nothing they could do for them. So it's very likely that these official figures that we're getting are gross underestimates. And that's not taking into account the impact on the psychological health of people from these genocidal attacks and the genocidal siege that has been going on, of the shortages, the calculated shortages of cancer treatment, to drugs, chemotherapy drugs, of dialysis drugs, of hundreds of drugs, surgical equipment, gauze, antibiotics. All of these things are in short supply, not because they don't exist or because of a natural disaster, but because Ehud Barak and other Israeli officials took a decision that we don't want elderly people in Gaza to have chemotherapy. We don't want children to eat. Those are conscious decisions taken by human beings. We have to always remember that.
All right, let me jump in here. We're speaking with Ali Abunima. What there isn't a shortage of is bombs. We have reports now that the United States made sure that Israel had a substantial amount of the new bunker buster missiles and supposed to be the most accurate in the world. That, along with the fact that the Israeli forces are surrounding Gaza, they're creating a major 2 to 4 kilometer security zone, and there is a grave concern that there will be an actual invasion and house-to-house fighting. What would be the results of this, Ali?
Well, the so-called security zone is designed to keep journalists out so that people cannot witness the atrocities, that, which are not being shown in the United States, but are being shown in the rest of the world. I've been watching Al Jazeera almost constantly for the past few days, and the scenes are absolutely shocking and traumatic and having an incredible galvanizing effect on world opinion. And Israel is very conscious of that, and so it wants to, under the guise of a so-called security zone, stop as much reporting as it can from going on. Now, Israel is calling up reserves. Whether or not they'll invade Gaza, we don't know. They want to keep people guessing. But what we do know is if they go in with ground troops, it will be a bloodbath, even more of a bloodbath than it already is. There's no doubt about that. It may be that Israel is now trying to get the green light or doing its, you know, crossing its diplomatic T's and dotting the I's to go in, to get permission to go in, and to know that the U.S., as its chief sponsor, will give it the time to quote, finish the job to the bitter end, as Ehud Barak put it, just like Israel needed a green light to try to finish off Hezbollah in 2006, although in that case it failed to do so.
All right, so we don't know what's going to happen with the invasion. We know that the United States has been blanked out in terms of the real implications and the real effect of these attacks. What are your concerns? And we only have a minute left, but what is most front on your mind?
What's most well, there are many things, but one point I want to make is that the Obama administration has also given its green light to this. And don't be fooled when he says we only have one president at a time, because if a Palestinian had blown himself up in a cafe with Israelis, he would not have stayed silent. He would have come out and made a, he would have been the first to come out and make a public statement. So his silence signals approval, and people need to be aware of that, stop sitting on their hands, and get up and demand a real change in U.S. policy.
Let me let people know that tonight, right now as we speak, Ollie, there's a vigil at Senator Dianne Feinstein's office at Montgomery and Market. Tomorrow there's going to be a major protest for those of you in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, 5 p.m. at the Israeli consulate. That's at 456 Montgomery Street, 456 Montgomery Street, Israeli consulate, tomorrow, Tuesday, for people in San Francisco in the Bay Area, 5 p.m., Israeli consulate, 456 Montgomery Street. If you want to show your outrage, you have this opportunity to join those who organize this, who are getting together to fight back. 30 seconds, Ollie. Why do you suppose it's important to stand up now? What's at stake?
We have to show the world that this cannot pass with impunity. But another point that's very important, it's important to go out into the streets and demonstrate. People are doing it all over the world. But it can't end there. This needs a long-term commitment, and Palestinians in Palestine are calling on us to support the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. It's a long-term commitment. It's moral. It's nonviolent resistance we can all take part in. Go to bdsmovement.net to learn more about it.
All right, Ollie Abunima, electronicintifada.net. We thank you for joining us, and that does wrap it up for another edition of Flashpoints.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints, which airs every weekday and is produced by Dennis Bernstein and Nora Barrows-Friedman. Our contributing producer is Robert Knight. Our interim technical director is Eric Klein, and our production assistants are Emily Howard and Evelina Molina. Our Friday co-host is Francisco Herrera. Miguel Molina is our roving producer, and JR and the Block Report contribute to this program. Amanda Bellerby is our environmental producer and also produces the weekly Best of Flashpoints. To comment on today's program or to subscribe to our Fight Back email list, please contact us at flashpoints@kpfa.org. You can look us up on the web at www.flashpoints.net for our archived shows. Many thanks to our web team, and thank you for listening. Music by Michael Franti, I Know I'm Not Alone, and David Rovics with Return. I'm Amanda Bellerby for Flashpoints.